Welcome to the Retro Domination Podcast, episode...
What? Daz.
What?
Hang on, mate.
What's going on?
This is not Retro Domination Podcast, mate.
What is this?
This is the Press Play on Tape Podcast, Daz.
Well, goddamn!
Yeah, goddamn, all right. Jeez, man, we practice this over and over again, and what do you do? Bang.
Oh, what? Oh, dude, I didn't even expect you on here. What are we going to...
Absolutely,
man. I like it. What are we going to talk about, man? What's this all about?
Dude, before cartridges, before discs, there was these things called tapes. You know, stuff that people probably, you know, had music on and whatever. But, yeah, tapes, man. Games were on tapes. You know, where you would actually put the tape in a tape player and press play. And
you press play.
Press play and then wait about 40 minutes and... You know, fingers crossed, the thing
works. That's right. Nah, thanks, guys. Thanks for joining us on our first episode. Yeah, it's myself, one of your hosts, Daz. And I have Alex here, Oz Retro Gamer as well. We are the Press Play on Tape Podcast.
Absolutely. Thanks for getting it right this time, dude.
Yes, of course. Yeah, we're quite excited about doing this. Alex and I wanted to dedicate a podcast on... 8 and 16-bit computers, and that's it.
Yeah. Speaking of which, Daz, mate, where did your love of home computers or micros begin?
Wow. Well, look, first it was the Atari 2600, so we'll go back there. I mean, gaming has to start from somewhere, and that's where it started for me, and I played that for many years, and... I remember going to a friend's house in primary school. I would be guessing about grade 4, so that might have been 1987, 88, and go to his house and I see this computer set up under a TV. And I used to think it was weird because whenever I go to someone's house that had an Atari or something, they'd always pack it up. They would never leave it under the TV. Now, I don't know if that was the same with you.
Absolutely,
Alex.
Man. There was only one TV in the house, and there was no way you could leave it out. You had to pack it away.
Yeah, so I say, what's going on? Why is there a computer just then, you know, just sitting there? If no one's using it, why isn't it packed up? He goes, it's a Commodore 64. And I can't remember by memory if it was a bread bin or if it was the C model. But anyway, because you want to have a player, I go, yeah, why not? So I'm thinking, what's this, a computer, you know? Because I was actually used to... Actually, I lied, because actually the first... game computing I did do was Apple IIe in primary school. Games like Transylvania and actually Dark Crystal I played too.
You're kidding me, dude.
I'm not kidding.
That was exactly my first experience with playing a computer game. Transylvania on the Apple IIe in 1983, I think it was.
And it was so awesome.
But
yeah, I mean, obviously not many people that I knew... I didn't know anyone that had a Apple IIe, but anyway... Back to that guy's house, so I just thought, okay, it could be like the Apple IIe. He put on a game, and it's funny, I still remember the first game I ever played on it. It was a game called Back to Reality by Mastertronic. Have you played that before?
That was actually my very first game that I bought. For the
Bullshit! Finish.
No, I'm not kidding you. That and Ninja Master.
Wow! Oh, mate, the stars are aligning, Alex.
Absolutely,
the stars are aligning.
I can't believe we didn't even talk about this before the actual podcast, but no, it's true.
Wow! Yeah, but I remember playing it faintly, and I thought, this looks really good. Like, I really liked it. Okay, this is really just different. I thought, there's a proper character on the screen, and it can move him around, and he's flying, and I don't know what the hell was going on. And, you know, that's all I remember. I remember playing that for a little bit, then running outside and kicking a ball. Yeah, ever since then, I was really interested in one. And fellow retro gamer and close friend Mark Kassar from the RD podcast ended up getting one. And there used to be a festival next to his house, like a Maltese festival. And it was, you know, with big parades and so on. And I used to just leave the festival. My dad used to say, yeah, go Mark's house. I used to get bored, so we used to go to his house. And I'd be playing Wonder Boy on the 664 there all the time, and I would love it. I was like, this is just so cool. And then a few years later, so yeah, about maybe, I think it was 89, I went to Toy World way back when it was like the in thing. It was like Toys R Us, you could say.
Absolutely.
Back in the day. And I was with my mother, and I wanted an Atari 2600 game, because I didn't have a computer then still. And I still remember the game. It was Desert Falcon. That's the one. It was Desert Falcon. I never played it before, but I thought, I liked the cover, looked cool. Like, yeah, I want that. And she said, no, you're not getting it. And I was so upset and got home and I ran away from home at like 8, 9 years old.
Where did you go?
I went to my friend's house. And then I realised it was about 4 or 5 o'clock. I go, oh, the street lights are going to go on, so I better go back home. So here I am expecting my parents to just tell me off. And I walked into the kitchen and they're looking at me smiling. And I'm like, okay, geez, I've done something wrong and they're smiling at me. And my sister comes and blocks my way because I was trying to go into my bedroom. And she's grabbing me and she's going, don't do it. Don't go in your bedroom. Don't go in your bedroom. I go, leave me alone. I was crying again like a sook. You know, because I still wanted that game. I walk in my bedroom and I see a Commodore 64 Pro Pack with Disk Drive sitting on my bed.
Oh, with the Disk Drive.
Yeah, man. I was just unbelievable. And I've said this before in another podcast, that, you know, people have asked me, how come she did that? I go, well, she felt sorry for me. So, yeah, I was a spoiled shit, pretty much.
So actually, did you actually have a data set with it or not?
No.
So, mate, press play on tape.
Play, yeah, I know. Load talking marks, asterisk talking marks, 8.1, man. No,
I was going to say, or you do a list if you do a load song.
Yeah, that's right, 8. yeah, no, I remember getting the... Let me grab it, see if I can find it. Oh, it was the C64 Pro Pack disc, and it had like 20 games on there. And it had a game called Five-A-Side Soccer, which I absolutely loved. And thankfully, I had a friend of mine that gave me his C64 stuff about a month ago, and that pack was in it, with the cut, with the box and everything. Mate, so much nostalgia in that. But that's my beginnings, and from then on, I still own the same 64 today.
That's awesome.
Yeah. How's your first time?
Are we talking about computers? Of course, now we'll keep it PG.
Console, man.
No, look, man, like everybody else, it was, looking at Atari 2600 and... I think it was at Billy Guide's, can't remember which particular store, but I remember walking past the window, seeing Asteroids, and I just went, wow, man. And, begging my parents for years, and it was too expensive. And I ended up getting a Hanamex 666T, one of those Pong-style gaming consoles with, which is pretty much only got 4 variations of Pong. That kept me occupied for a while. In the meantime, the Game & Watches were quite popular at school as well. And unfortunately, they were too expensive, so, got the knockoffs as well for those. And then my neighbour actually called me over at his place, and he had a bread bin, Commodore 64, and he was playing Decathlon. And I remember just sitting there in his room, I don't even think I blinked. And I had a go, waggling the joystick and seeing this person run faster and, slower, depending on my joystick movements. And I was just absolutely mesmerized, right? And then I was conflicted because I thought, oh, Atari, Commodore. But then I thought, nah, the Commodore would be way more expensive, and forgot all about it. Still kept on, hounding my parents for an Atari. Never happened. And then in 86, now I might not get the years right, but it was I actually ended up getting the Commodore 64 America's Cup pack. And just like yourself, I remember coming back from school, and my parents were home, my sister was home, and hello, whatever, and go in my bedroom, and lo and behold, on the bed is a Commodore 64 America's Cup pack. I just went, what? I actually started crying. I didn't even open it. I just went straight back into the kitchen, hugged everyone, and I think they were just rapt to see me, so excited.
Yeah.
Busted open, and unfortunately didn't come with a disk drive, mate, like you. Came with the data set and international soccer and Le Mans on kart.
Kart, yeah.
Got the paddles, got those brown, I forget the actual joysticks, I think they're the C1342s, so I might be wrong about that, but I pretty much destroyed them playing Decathlon and also Amiga.
Yeah, they were easy to break too. They were very comfortable,
Yeah, they were, absolutely.
They went sturdy.
And look, and there was America's Cup, Arnie Armchair's America's Cup, and Arnie Armchair's How's That Cricket. And I'll never forget loading America's Cup. It took 48 minutes to load.
No way.
Yeah, it was definitely the longest game I reckon I had. As in to load, sorry. And as so many times, if you didn't get the heads aligned properly, you know, the thing wouldn't load. So, you know, you'd go away, come back, and the decompression screen hasn't decompressed properly. And it's like, oh, well, okay, stop, rewind. Then my mum actually had a sewing kit, and she had a little screwdriver. And I don't even know how we figured this out, but I remember just putting the screwdriver into the hole and mucking around with the actual screen there, and, you know, voila, all of a sudden things start loading properly and, you know, get to play some games. But the first game, mate, back to reality.
That's amazing.
Because I remember going to a store. And, you know, they had the games, I think the Ocean Games and the Imagine Games were, I think, around the $19, $20 or even $30 mark for tapes and 40 for discs. And the Mastertronics one were around the $9, $10 mark. And I thought, well, there's no way I can get a $30 game, so I'll probably go for a $10 game. And Back to Reality was it. And Ninja Master, which was an absolute shocker, but I loved it, man. I loved it. I thought, oh, wow, look at all these games here. They're awesome. And I thought, this is much better than the Atari 2600.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah. And then, look, man, I was playing on tape for a good 2 years, actually almost 3 years. And then in 88, mum driving me all the way to Footscray because that was the closest Kmart to get a 1541-2. And I still remember it was $288.
Wow! Yeah. Geez.
Big money, man. Big money. And that was a week before Christmas in 88. It was great. And that Christmas, I reckon, I spent almost indoors for the next week or two, just playing games and backing up games, which I shouldn't have done, but...
We're all young, dude. Yeah. I mean, that's what happened.
I'm not going to shy away from it. The schoolyard was rife with swapping tapes and discs and whatnot, and but making up for it now by actually buying all games that I, you know, like playing and wherever I can find them on eBay or anywhere else. The Commodore 64 was it for me. And after that, obviously, I actually did the shift from an 8-bit Commodore to a 16-bit Atari ST. So, yeah, and I know we'll probably touch on that on another podcast some other time. But, that was my foray into how I got started into computing or micro home computing and playing games. But yeah, man, the Commodore 64, and I don't know if you did this as well, Daz, but did you do any of those typing codes and stuff?
Once I remember making a ball bounce across the screen, but then after that, I was like, no, I just want to play these games. I didn't have patience. I didn't have the patience for it.
I tried, and then, you know, you get one thing wrong, and trying to debug was like looking for a needle in a haystack. I just gave up. And most of the lists in magazines actually had errors in them anyway.
That's right.
So it was a useless piece of, well, I guess, training or whatever you want to call it to try and poke and peek and do all sorts of basic stuff on the Commodore 64. Yeah, gave up.
I think that's another topic we can talk about in another podcast, especially like that and what magazines we bought.
Absolutely.
Yeah. There's just so much to talk about, everyone.
Yeah, there is, man, and I know there's a lot of fervor on our Facebook page, and we'll probably get to that later on as well. But Daz, I don't know, what did you want to speak about next?
Okay, I thought we'll talk about a certain publisher. I thought we'll focus on one publisher per episode, if we can.
Sounds good to me.
You like that? All right, cool. I'm choosing Ocean for this episode.
You've gone straight for the top, dude.
Yeah, man. Yeah, dude. I mean. That's awesome. Yeah, I don't muck around, man.
Ocean.
I'll let you choose the next one. You choose the next one for next podcast.
Will do, dude. Will do. Yeah. Thank you.
So, all right. Let's talk about Ocean. I'll let you go first. Do you have any in mind? Were there any Ocean games that stood out for you, or ones that were complete crap?
Look, for me, Ocean probably. I actually hold dearest to my heart, really. There was other publishers, of course, that made fantastic games, but Ocean, for me, especially all their movie tie-in games, a lot of their arcade conversions, their chip tunes, the loaders, fantastic, man. And Batman stands out because I was absolutely mesmerized by the Batman movie. So Batman, both the Caped Crusader and the actual movie game.
Caped Crusader, I had a lot of trouble with.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't get it. I couldn't get it.
Yeah. What in particular, the actual control mechanism?
I didn't know what to do.
The comic style stuff.
Yeah, I love the graphics and all, and the music was unreal, but I didn't know what to do. I was young and dumb, so I don't know. I thought this is really, really weird. I just couldn't. I used to like playing it, but I had no idea.
Look, I must admit, as soon as the other one came out, Batman the movie, that was because I thought the movie was awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the game just did it for me. But look, man, there's quite a few games, but the ones that really stand out are Grisel or Contra. Mm-hmm.
Was that Ocean?
Yeah, that was Ocean.
Yeah. I imagine. Yeah.
Yeah. Operation Wolf.
Yeah, that was great.
Yep. Cabal.
Yes.
Yeah, Cabal. That was. Oh man. Oh yeah. I remember. Actually, that was probably one of the first games I bought properly on disc, rather than. Mm-hmm. Going through the schoolyard marketplace. New Zealand story. That was
spot on, man. A lot of people pick on the C64 version.
Really?
Because because the Kiwi bird doesn't look like it does in the arcade.
Oh, geez. Well, you know what? It's you're talking about an arcade system that's got tens of thousands of dollars of. Chips in it, and then you've got a Commodore 64.
Yeah, because the Amstrad one looks horrible. No offense to anyone. The Spectrum one doesn't look great, but yeah, he does look like the character in the arcade. But it just doesn't scroll the same, and it's not as fast. The music's not the same. You know what I mean? I think as a whole package, I find the 64 version the best one out of the three. That's my opinion. But anyway,
RoboCop, another. Another awesome game.
You liked it.
Yeah, I did. I did. Again, man, anything to do with a movie and Ocean, and Ocean were absolute kings at this. Excuse me. They pretty much nailed it. Getting all those tie-ins, Rambo, Cobra. Not that, most of them were, I would say, fantastic games, but
Cobra.
Stood out. Like when you went to shops, I'd look for that and be like, oh wow, look at this. So they knew exactly how to target the game playing public. Run the Gauntlet, another favourite of mine. Yeah, I know people or gamers don't think much of it, or might be just a throwaway game, but no, I still actually play it. The Untouchables.
Brilliant. Wow.
I'm glad you said that.
Wow. if anything it's probably just as good as Batman the movie.
Yeah, no, it was awesome, dude. Awesome. And then really their last few games in the early 90s, by then I'd actually jumped off the 64, unfortunately. But I specifically remember Pang and Smash TV.
On the ST?
No, on the 64, yeah.
Okay.
They were probably the last couple of games I probably played on the 64. And I thought they were awesome. But yeah, man, look, I can go on forever, and there's other games that I'm sure that you'll probably touch on as well. But
yeah,
and an interesting fact: at the height of their publishing, they actually won the Software House of the Year 1989 at the British Golden Joystick Awards.
Oh wow!
Yeah, so Ocean, there we go.
I'm pretty sure Ocean is Eidos now.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Is that who swallowed him up? Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Ah, well, there's another interesting fact. No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, there you go. Were there any ones that just, didn't agree with you?
I can't think of any right now, dude. But while you're talking, I'll have a think about it.
Okay.
I'll have a think about it, because I was actually just thinking, there were so many games that I love, but I guarantee there was probably a few shockers in there as well, but I'll try to put them in the back of my head and not want to associate Ocean with crappy titles, but everyone's got crappy games.
That's exactly right. Well, I'll go with their very first game they ever made, and that was Hunchback.
Ah.
Yeah, I loved it. Always loved it. Rainbow Islands is just so good on the C64. It's got everything. I actually prefer it over the arcade version.
Really? How come?
Yeah. Maybe because that's what I was used to at the time. And now when I play the arcade one, it just doesn't feel the same for me.
That's fair enough.
Yeah, it just... I mean, obviously, you know, a lot of people won't agree with me, but that's just something I grew up with, and I really... that's what I'm used to. So, yeah, no, I love that. Jeez, man. Head Over Heels was phenomenal, no matter what version you're playing. Toki I liked a lot.
Ah, that came out later, yeah?
Yes, yeah, that's 91.
Ah, okay.
Yep. That came out in 91. Midnight Resistance on the C64.
Oh, wow.
Belted it. Not only did it have awesome graphics, I thought, the music was just unbelievable.
Absolutely, man.
Batman the Movie, as you mentioned before, that's probably my number one Ocean game.
Great.
I have to say, you probably would have been out of the C64 by this time, but Hook. Did you ever play Hook?
No. Hook as in the movie?
Yes.
Yes. No. What was it? Was it a platformer or...?
It's like a platformer, but it's got... The map on it is like Super Mario Bros. 3.
Ah.
So, you know, you move your character to the next level and then it loads and then it's a side-scrolling platformer. Very, very, very good. I bought that on disc when it came out. And it was just one of those games I thought, well, I just bought it. It's Ocean. It's going to be good. And it was awesome. If you can't get that version, you can always get the NES version. It's pretty much the same thing.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So it's pretty much... I think that was, if I'm... I could be wrong, but I think it only came out on 8-bit formats, but I could be wrong.
Well, so, I'm gonna take note, dude. I definitely want to play it now.
It's really, really good. Really, really good. But yeah, please, people, don't get angry if I'm wrong about that. It could have came out in the 16-bits. I'm not too sure. I'm not going to Google anything. This is all in my brain. Short Circuit, I didn't mind, even though I didn't know... know what was going on. I didn't mind that. And, what was it? Frankie Goes to Hollywood? Was that Ocean,
yeah.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, it sure was.
Loved it. I loved it. I was probably a bit too young to play that because there's like condoms and stuff in there, but I didn't know what was going on. But I loved the music in it, and it was just really cool. It was really creepy. Had a really creepy feel to it. Yeah, yeah, I really enjoyed that. What I was so disappointed with, and I bought it back in the day and I took it back, was Chase HQ. And that is just a pile of crap. When I recently got my ZX Spectrum, I played Chase HQ on that, because I was told it was highly recommended. And it is, no kidding, dude, you're probably going to laugh at me, I find it the most playable and most enjoyable home version out there.
What?
Yep. I've even got the Sega Saturn version, and it doesn't feel the same to me. I don't know why.
There we go.
Yeah, it's maybe because the Sega Saturn version that I got, it's in Japanese, and I'm used to the voices being in English.
Yeah.
So it took away the nostalgia behind it. It didn't feel authentic, even though obviously it's Japanese, it's the real deal. But the Spectrum version with the speech in it, it's smooth. It's like, how could they screw up the C64 one? I don't understand.
That's amazing. But yeah. How many times you would, turn the back of the box and they'll have a Spectrum screenshot, 64, and probably an Amiga or an ST screenshot. Mm. And I would always find that the Speccy version always looked good, and obviously the colours weren't there, but
yeah,
it always looked sharp. So there we go, huh?
Yeah, that's what I love about the Spectrum. I've got people telling me, oh, the graphics are crap. Go, what's wrong with them? Oh, nah, look, there's like 2-3 colours on there. I go, did you enjoy the Game Boy? Yeah.
Exactly.
Well then, sorry, your opinion don't mean anything.
Spot on.
So, yeah, that's my ammunition for it. And, Chase HQ is really good on the Amstrad as well. So for the Amstrad version to be better than the C64 one, wow. But it's actually very playable, and it's nice colours, got a lot of nice colour in there, and it's, I think it's the speech as well, from memory.
And I can't believe you put the 64 last. So Speccy, Amstrad, hold top honours.
Yeah, man. I mean, look, you gotta give credit where credit's due. You know what
absolutely,
I mean?
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. Like, that's what this podcast is all about.
That's right.
Just Commodore centric. We're gonna be looking back at all these computers.
Mm. I'm probably rambling on a bit too much. But what else was there that I really loved?
Did you like Match Day or any soccer games that...
No, you know what? The only soccer game I ever played was Micropro Soccer. Oh. And Five-A-Side Soccer. They were the only two.
Oh, Micro Soccer was... Yeah. Oh, wow. Awesome.
That was great. But the Untouchables, as we mentioned before, was brilliant. I didn't like RoboCop.
Oh, heck no.
It just didn't feel like the arcade. I was like, what the hell's going on? You couldn't punch.
See, this is like Rainbow Islands for you. So I actually played RoboCop on the 64 first.
Oh, okay.
So I had nothing to compare it to, and yeah.
Yeah, see, I could. I'm like, oh man, what the hell? Even the Spectrum version is like more like the arcade one.
Actually, I don't know if I'm remembering correctly, but I think the home versions came out before the arcade.
Really?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure Ocean had the film tie-in rights, and they released the game, and then they actually released it at the arcades.
Yes, you're right. Yeah, because Data East needed the licensing. I think they had to get that off Ocean.
I thought so. That's why, yeah, I definitely never played it in the arcade. I remember playing it afterwards, so I had nothing to compare it to. But at the time, I liked the music, and...
Music was great.
Yeah.
Graphics were great. I just didn't feel like it played right. I know, that's what makes us different. Adam's Family, I didn't mind.
Adam's Family?
Yeah, that was near the end.
Okay.
Near one of their last ones. Navy SEALs was pretty cool, that got really hard. I actually played that, I didn't play that back in the day, I played that on the emulator.
Ah.
But yeah, Operation Wolf was great. Operation Thunderbolt was awesome if you had the mouse.
Yep.
Yeah.
Did you actually have a mouse?
Near the end, I can't remember where I got it from.
No.
I own two now. I don't even know where they came from. But
how do they actually play? I've never actually played on the 64 with a mouse. So.
Fine. It's like playing on an Amiga and Atari ST.
Oh.
Yeah, now it works really well. Oh, geez, how could I forget Combat School?
Oh, awesome game. Geez, and that would have broken a few joysticks too.
Yeah, it did. It did. I used to get so far. But, yeah. Whiz Ball. Wow.
Yeah, Whiz Ball's another awesome game.
Great game, but that's pretty much it. See, I never really got into Platoon. I know a lot of people really like that.
Yeah, that actually, I remember at the time, Zap was raving all about it. I didn't mind it, but yeah, I didn't think much of it.
Me neither. It looked and sounded great, but I know it was just something I couldn't get my head around. I just didn't really get into it.
Yeah. Did you ever play Parallax?
No. Okay. No. That's sensible, isn't it? Yeah, John Hare made that.
Was it?
Yeah, John Hare.
Oh, okay. And Ocean published it, I think.
Yes, correct.
Yeah, no, that was... and the music in that is awesome, too. A few of the Arnie ones, Red Heat. I don't know if you've ever...
Yeah, that was awesome. I loved it.
Narc. I didn't mind Narc either.
Oh, I don't think I actually played the C64 version. It didn't look pretty. I was so disappointed with Shadow Warriors.
Yeah, look, again, if you play those in the arcades,
and
we won't talk about a certain beat 'em up from 1987, yeah.
What, the Ocean release of Double Dragon?
No, Melbourne House, I'm afraid.
Yeah, well, even the Ocean version ain't that great, man.
Is it? I was so disappointed, I never ever wanted to play any other Double Dragon ever again on the Commodore 64, no matter who did it. But so you're saying the Ocean one was just as...
Sure. It's not just as bad, but it's bad.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
So if you had to pick one game from Ocean, which one would it be?
My top number one?
Yeah.
It's close, but I'll go top three. Number one, 100%, would be Batman the Movie.
Yep.
Then I'd say The Untouchables. And then Hook.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yours?
Mine will be Operation Wolfie number one.
Wow.
Yeah, without a shadow of a doubt. Cabal.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah.
And Run the Gauntlet, believe it or not.
Yeah, forget about that. No, dude, that's worthy. Yeah. That's worthy. That's a great game.
Yeah. Oh, look, I can probably say equal, you know, first, second, third, and name another 15 games, but...
Yeah.
But no, someone put a gun to my head, yeah, man.
Mention that. What are your favourite Ocean games?
That's right. Yeah, but how great was Operation Wolf, even with a joystick?
Yeah, dude.
It was really, really cool. And the music was awesome. Yeah, just everything about it. Yeah, so Ocean made a lot of games that were really, really good. A few that were, you know, below par, but overall, anytime I saw that logo on a box, I would rush to it and go, oh, let's just have a look.
Yeah.
And they did that really, really well. They did that for a number of years, and
That was actually a special mention to Salamander.
Ah.
I reckon that's pretty much a arcade perfect port, minus missing a level. Yeah. But it's so close to the original arcade version. It's done so well.
I don't know. Was that Ocean or
Imagine? Yeah.
Oh, Imagine. Yep. Oh, that's right. Yeah, they got bought out, didn't they?
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Salamander's brilliant. Brilliant game.
Hard. Very hard. That fire level is just a bitch.
Most of the Commodore 64 games were absolutely tough as nails. And the reason we're banging on about the Commodore 64 or why I am is that, yeah, I never had an Amstrad or a Spectrum. Well, the Spectrums, I don't even know if they were released in Australia.
No, they weren't. No.
So we didn't have one of those. I was actually lucky enough to have the Commodore 64. And most of my friends had those as well. I didn't know anyone with an Amstrad. Did you, Daz?
Yes, I did, actually. I was going to go into that. My neighbour across the road had one.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah, yeah. And the first game I played on that was Super Robin Hood. The first Oliver Twins game.
Ah, there we go.
For Codemasters, yeah.
Ah.
And funny enough, because I got an Amstrad given to me for my birthday last year, and I was pretty happy with that.
Jeez, you're so lucky, man.
I know, I'm so lucky. But, the cool thing is, before I even bought that, I always had a copy ready sealed for me with Super Robin Hood. I bought it prior.
Because it's
nostalgia, you know what I mean? And I tried playing the C64 one, and it's horrible.
Ah.
It hasn't got the speech or anything like that. And the Amstrad version is quite playable, and it's a lot of fun. That was my introduction to Amstrad gaming. I had also my brother-in-law's brother, we can say he's my brother, David. He had one as well, but his one was a green screen, unfortunately. But I remember we were just sitting there waiting for this tape to load and all that. I can't remember the games that we were playing on there. It's been that long. It could have been Boulder Dash. Am I right, David? Hopefully he's listening.
And hopefully he's saying, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, man. Yeah. So, there's not much else I can remember with the Amstrad. Like, again, Specky as well. There was no one here. As far as I know, the first person that had a Specky was myself. And then you ended up getting one, so...
I sure did, yeah. Special mention to Matt Harper in the UK. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Awesome. But, sorry, man, getting back to the Amstrad, I know people didn't like the colours. I actually thought the colours were quite cool. You know, the red, green, black, and all that. I don't know. What did you think about that?
It's like the Spectrum. It's how they're used.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The same with the C64. I guess it's just the way you mix them up. You know what I mean? If you put the right colours in the right place, the game's going to look okay.
Oh, sorry, man. I was talking about the keyboard.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the graphics. No, the keyboard. The keyboard looks fine. There's nothing wrong with it.
I know people just go, oh my God, man, it's so garish, but I reckon it's cool.
You know, you never judge a book by its cover. That's why I say. It could be a turd there, and you stick a cartridge in there, and the game's awesome. I don't care.
Exactly right. Well, if I remember correctly, man, I remember I used to think the breadwinds were absolutely ugly. Commodore 64 breadwinds. I just thought, ooh, yuck. I want the C ones, right? The C version. They're sleek and they're cream, and they look much better. But amazing. After all these years, it's like, nah, the breadwinds. Yeah, where the heart is at, the Commodore 64.
No, see, I like the C. I always preferred the C, yeah.
There we go.
Yeah. I own both, but the C, like I said, because it was the one I bought. I mean, the one I got given to me as a kid, it's the one I'm used to.
Oh, same. Yeah, yeah, same here, sorry. My neighbour had the bread bin. I never had it. I've got one now. I've got a couple of them now. It was a C64C as well that I had. At the time, I thought, oh, look at my Commodore 64 compared to my neighbour's. Much better.
There's actually a German release of the bread bin with the colours of the C64C.
Ah.
Yeah, it looks really good. It was released by Aldi, if I'm correct.
What are you doing to me, Daz? Now you're going to make me get on eBay and, you know, spend up the mortgage repayment on a on a Commodore 64 from Germany.
They don't go for, they don't go cheap. That's all I can say. But
okay, I'll just admire them from afar.
Now I don't know if you can confirm it for me, but did the Britbin have better picture and sound, like a better sound chip? Is it chip?
They definitely have variations on the actual chips, and now you're putting me on the spot. I'm not 100% sure without actually Googling, but they definitely have variations on the actual chips, and depending on whether Commodore or whether 64 was actually made as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because I moved around Jack Tramiel. Oh, sorry, that was actually after Jack Tramiel, but they had a few that were made in Hong Kong. I can't remember, I think the C's might have been made in Hong Kong as well.
Yes, I think it is. The Britbin I have is in England.
England, yeah. Yeah. So I'm pretty sure they had different or varying chips. If they were any better or not, that is a very, very good question. And maybe we can probably get Bob Yanes on a podcast one day. The creator of the SID chip and, one of the key developers of the Commodore 64.
That would be crazy.
Yeah, it would, wouldn't it?
It would. And we have Bob here!
Jeez, man, I actually turned around then.
So, yeah, well, that's pretty much it. Yeah, we can go on to our wall. What do you think? It's already that time.
Wow. Jeez, I thought we just started.
Yeah, well, we can keep going.
Oh, well. Up to you. But, I reckon we'll go to the wall and see
what's going on. Let's go to the wall. So, okay, I'll go for the first one on here. Frank Skilton. Good old Frank, how are you, mate? If you could go back in time and be a game character who programmed an awesome game, which platform would you choose to write your game on? And what type of game would you create? That's a hard question. Well, obviously, it'll probably be... Well, it has to be the C64 then, I guess. Well... What game would I create? I would probably create a really good Masters of the Universe game.
Wow, dude.
Yeah.
If you were right here, I would absolutely hug and kiss you right now.
Virtual hug and kiss there.
Now, hang on. Would it be an RPG adventure style, or would it be like a...
A platformer. A platformer. So, picture Castlevania.
Nice.
Yeah. It'll have to be something like that. Because there isn't not one good Masters of the Universe game out there. There's actually one on the iOS that's actually looking too bad. But besides that, there's nothing out there. The movie game was crap. There was some other one that was released on the C64 and vintage computers that was really bad. And the PS2 version's just a crock. So, yeah, you know, if I was a cool programmer from back in the day, a game creator, I would create a Masters of the Universe game.
Nice, man. Nice. I know if I was coding in my room, it would be on the Commodore 64, obviously. It would either be a platform game or a shoot 'em up of some kind, mm-hmm. either vertical or horizontal. But not that the Commodore wasn't short on those, but was short on those. But yeah, man, I really like your Master of the Universe thing. You're right. I absolutely love the toy line, and it was a shame there was never any game that was fantastic back in those days. Yeah, man. Good answer.
Alright, cool. Alright, you want to go next?
Yeah, David Musket. What game had you playing it over and over to get a high score? What high score are you guys particularly proud of? Okay, I'll admit this, right? I'm not a gamer that actually completes games. I get frustrated very easily. I play, and lo and behold, most Commodore 64 games were quite tough to complete. excuse me, but playing games over and over again, look, it was mainly the sports games. I remember playing World Games, California Games, Micro Soccer, England Hughes International Soccer, and I'll be playing those over and over again. But in regard to getting a high score, it might have just been a platform game or a shoot 'em up. But yeah, I don't specifically remember going for high scores. I try to clear stages and try and get as far as possible.
Yeah, likewise.
Yeah, stuff like, you know, Cabal or whatever. But high score games, no. I probably started that later on consoles. But early on, no, definitely, I don't recall that for high scores. But that's because I wasn't particularly that good.
Well, look, David, this is the C64 era. You didn't care about scores back then. You just wanted to pass the level because it was always that hard. Yeah, pretty much. But if you were to look at something like that, I would probably play Creatures 2 a lot. That was probably the game that I would always try to strive to get further and further, and that was damn hard. Any game, any time, any way I actually finished that game was with unlimited lives and cheating. I couldn't do it any other way. And Myth was another one.
Oh wow. Yeah.
Yeah. But besides that, I mean, games that I've actually finished would be Last Ninja 1 and 2. And I got up to the last boss in 3 and I couldn't beat it. And I finished Vendetta as well, but again, that's not scores.
Well,
I was really good at those isometric games, actually.
Wow, man, that's... Yeah. Well, you should be... Well, like David says, you should be proud of those. That's good. Unfortunately, I don't have any proud moments because, without using the trainers that good old Crackers used to put in, I found games a bit too hard, I think. Mm. Yeah, so there you go.
Okay, we'll go to the next one. Thank you, David. Next one's Andrew Birch. What was or is your preferred expansion fast load cartridge for the C64 and why? Example, Final Cut, Action Replay, Epic's Fast Load, Graphics Pirate. Back in the day, yeah?
Did you actually have one back in the day?
Yes, I had the Freeze Machine.
Jeez, man, you had a disk drive and you had...
Freeze Machine. I've still got it, actually. But yeah, it was the Freeze Machine that I used to use back then, or the... Because actually, what I used to do, I was naughty, when I used to copy games, I would actually add the fast load to the disc. So then I'd put like 4 games on the disc and add the fast loader. So when you load the first file on there with the asterisks, it'll bring up a menu, fast load menu, just on the disc drive. Ba-ba-ba-bang, and you just pick the game you want. But like now I've got everything running on Jiffy DOS, so... I don't need to use that at all, and that's super fast.
So how old would you have been doing that back in the day?
Oh, about 11.
Oh, man, that's impressive.
10, 11, yeah.
That's impressive. Well, all I can say is that I kept on looking at the Epic's Fast Load and Action Replay in the mags, and they were going for about 150, 160 here in Australia, and, yeah, could never afford one. Got an Action Replay 6 now, and every time I use it, I think, wow, man, if I actually had this back in the day, it would have just made my day. But yeah, for me, it's the Action Replay.
Oh, nice, nice. All right, next.
From Jay Cordwell, what was the most popular DOS-based game, and when did DOS games lose their popularity? I was never a PC-type player, but I do remember playing Prince of Persia, and was absolutely blown away by it. The whole movement, the way the character moved and the jumping and, you know, clawing onto a ledge, I just thought, wow. And that was at high school. I can't remember the actual computers we actually had, but we did start off with BBC Micros, and then a new teacher came in and either threw those all out and got XT and then AT computers. But yeah, I remember just playing that and wow, this is awesome.
Me, like Alex, I sort of skipped the DOS era. It used to be more... Because like a lot of my friends had them in high school, and at that time I was on the Mega Drive, so I wouldn't really touch DOS. But when I went to friends' houses that had PCs that could afford them, because they were mega expensive back then. Real expensive. And there was one game in particular that really caught my eye, and a game called Raptor. But it was actually a shareware game. Did you ever play that, Alex?
No.
It's a shmup, a vertical shmup, and it's really, really good. And it looks really, really good, and that was probably one of my favourites. Prince of Persia as well. I can't remember where I got it from. I think it was from Mark as well. I got Prince of Persia. I had it on a floppy disk, and I'd take it to school and play it on the school computer on our breaks and stuff, and I'll just load it up via the computer, you know, via the disk drive straight in their computer. I'd get told off, but I didn't care. I kept playing it. Commander Keen was a big one for me.
Oh, yeah.
Loved it. And that was written in Ballarat.
No
you know
way.
That? Yep. Oh, the game developers are from Ballarat, yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So there you go. That's another bit of information. So, that... again, at David Musket's house, I used to play Bioforge. That was pretty much... At that time, I think soon after that, I ended up getting a PC. So, but when I got into PC, it was Windows 8. So,
See, I could never actually get a...
Sorry, Windows 8. Sorry, 98.
I was going to say, just Windows, that was only like last year.
Yeah, I know.
I remember, just trying to play with a keyboard and mouse. I just could not get it. And I always stuck with consoles. So, playing Wolfenstein and Doom and things like that. They were brilliant games, but I just absolutely sucked using the keyboard and the mouse. So...
It used to shit me because I used to always have sound problems, and I always had to set up the sound blaster card, and it was like, I gave up.
That was the hardest part about PCs. You had different variations, you know, you had your graphics card, the CPU, and whatnot, and it was like, oh man, by the time you get it right, the enjoyment's gone.
Well, it's funny enough, the first time I actually used MAME was DOS. Was on DOS, and again Mark supplied me the disc. I remember he supplied me Simpsons Arcade, and I remember I had to drive to his house to go get it, and I was like wrapped when I got home, and he could tell. I was like, oh fuck, do I have to do another game, you know. He wanted to just go out and play some hockey with his mates, and I'd be there hanging around like a dag around his bum and wanting all these games. I love you, Mark. That's my answer.
Awesome. Thanks for the question, Jay. Next, you can introduce the next one, Daz.
The mighty Greg Hansen.
Yeah.
Okay, Greg, man. What would be your recommended system and method of playing games on this system for someone wanting to get into classic computer gaming? That's a great question.
It is. Yes, I do have an answer, but...
Go.
Oh, no, well, I was going to say Commodore 64. And I would go with the with a 1541 Ultimate cart, Ultimate 2 cart, and just load up a micro SD card with all the images, obviously the legitimate images, and that's probably the best way to play. Or failing all that, obviously getting a BIOS emulator on a PC.
Yeah,
you can do it that way. But yeah, if you can buy a Commodore 64, but you can't find the games and whatnot, I would definitely opt for a 1541 Ultimate 2 cart and do it that way. And if all that fails, then emulation is the way to go.
Yeah, or you can go the cheaper route and get the SD card reader.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you could do that.
Absolutely.
That's actually not too bad if you use that in conjunction with a final. I think it's a Final Cart 3.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and then I can hook that up to a 1541.2, and then I can actually dump the ROM images onto a physical disk. So that's another way. But yeah, your way is the best, but it's very pricey.
It is. It is, unfortunately, quite pricey. But yeah, man, got that SD2 IEC card as well. So yeah, you can use that. That's probably half the price of the 1541 Ultimate. But yeah, look, whatever you can afford. If you can't, then... Thank God we live in the age of emulation, so no one misses out, which is great.
Well, you've said the C64 now. I'd either go with the Amiga or the ZX Spectrum. The Amiga, you can get an Amiga 500, or if preferably an Amiga 1200 or a 600, and you can get a GoTech drive, which runs games off a USB stick, and they only cost about $30 to $40. Memory.
That's good.
Yeah, you just got to install it yourself. It's not hard. And and if you have a ZX Spectrum, or if you want one, they're pretty pricey. But if you can get one shipped to you, cheapest way without even buying games, I know it's naughty, but you can get a tape converter. You know those tape adapters you'd put in your car stereo so you can plug in a CD player?
Yeah.
Get one of those. Run like a specky player, audio player, on your phone, iOS or Android, and play the audio files via your phone, and the specky will load it.
How cool is that?
Yeah. You can do that with the C64 as well.
Modern technology, merges beautifully with old.
Well, I actually did it with my Amstrad at the moment, because I've only got that Super Robin Hood, so that's what's getting me by for now.
Fantastic.
Yeah. That's it for the wall.
That's it. Wow.
Thank you, everyone.
Yeah, thank you very much for taking time to shoot us your questions. Awesome. Yeah, Des, I know at the top of the actual podcast we said that, yeah, we're going to talk about 8-bit and 16-bit computers, but we really didn't actually go into the computers we will actually touch on over the coming podcasts. But, you've got your Spectrums, your Amstrads, STs, Amigas, Commodore 64, but, you know, VIC-20s, the Atari...
Atari line, yeah?
Yeah, yeah, and some of the more obscure ones, the SAM Coupe, the Texas Instruments, TRS, Dick Smith VZs, I don't know if you ever saw those.
No.
I'm not gonna rubbish it. because, yeah, someone did have one and they probably absolutely loved it. And, excuse me, we did actually talk about bit about the Apple II as well, so
I'd like to cover that. I'd like to get into that a bit more later.
Yeah, I think schools could afford them, and we only had one in the class, by the way. And for home use, forget it. They were priced astronomically, so that's why everyone was going for something like a Commodore 64 or an Amstrad because they were around the $500 mark. What else? The MSX range, which really didn't come out here, but in Japan.
And Europe too, weren't they?
As far as I know.
Yeah. I actually know someone that's a big MSX fan, so maybe they can join us on the podcast one day.
Awesome.
So I'll have a chat to him.
Yeah, that would be cool. BBC Micro, we use those at school.
I didn't even know they existed here.
Yeah, 32 kilobytes. And I remember seeing them and I'm thinking, what the hell is this? It was just a black and green screen as well. And all I remember we kept on doing was playing Defender. So that was our introduction to the BBC Micro. But obviously, I would always compare it to the Commodore 64 and go, oh, this is rubbish.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind going back to the older Sinclair computers as well. I reckon, like the
ZX81. Yeah,
definitely. Commodore PET.
Wow, you're going real old school there.
Yeah, I know, mate. I know that's before a lot of people's time.
Was there any games on the thing?
Good question. There might have been, but I can't remember. I definitely didn't have one, and to buy one now, yeah, you'll have to be a millionaire. They go for big bucks.
They're drug money. Oh, there were a few games.
Okay.
There were games on there. Wow, Jumpman's there.
Ah, there we go.
Yeah.
The Dragon 32, there's so many computers that we will definitely... So we won't run out of material. We can talk about a lot of computers, and obviously use the wall... on Facebook and throw us other computers that we might not have talked about or made a mention. The C128, which I never understood at the time. You know, you would always get a game, it would be like Commodore 64/128, I would think. Well, what's the point of owning a 128 when all the games are for the Commodore 64? So.
And there weren't many games that released for that either.
Yeah, that's a shame.
Yeah, it's a shame that didn't take off, did it?
No, absolutely right. And a 16-bit, man, for me, it was all about Amiga and the Atari ST. Mm.
Yeah, me, it was the Amiga, anything. But that was more mates had them. Like, I didn't really... I bought one, probably about 9 years ago, 8-9 years ago, at a market for $20 with extra 1 gig of RAM. 1 meg of RAM!
Wow.
Yeah, for $20. TV modulator, mouse, and everything. So, I was quite late. By the time I got that, it was dead already. So,
yeah, I did the same with the Amiga because I got the ST first, and then the Amiga later. And it was pretty much to me. It was already dead because Sega Nintendo started taking over really Australia. So,
So I didn't know anyone with an ST. There was only one I knew of at a recording studio.
Well, see, being a music person, I thought you would have jumped all over the ST, but I knew a lot of people that were into their music and they had STs, and that's why I got one. I thought it was a great computer. Secretly, I was always jealous of Amiga users because yeah, they were fantastic. I remember playing Super Hang On at a mate's place. We were studying, exams, and thought, let's have a break. And I was playing Super Hang On, and just the sound of the motorbike, I just went, wow! It just absolutely blew me away. And yeah, but they're just too expensive. Way too expensive, unfortunately.
We'll get to that more later, I reckon. There's so much to talk about.
Absolutely, that's for another episode. Look, I know we touched on this as well, but schoolyard arguments, Daz. Did you have any, and what was the actual arguments over which particular computers?
You know what? Everyone had C64s, dude.
Yeah.
And by the time the Amiga came out, if anything, it could have been a little bit with the Amiga, but... With us C64 people didn't bother arguing because we knew that the Amiga was just superior.
Yeah.
You know, graphics-wise. But I still... Actually, I kind of lie, because when I had... A good mate of mine had the Amiga, and he ended up getting... Oh, what was... What game was it? I think it was Creatures 1. And he was over the moon that he had Creatures 1 on the Amiga. And for some reason, the 64 version still plays better. And another game I used to compare was Kickstart 2. Now, if you play that on the Amiga, you'll vomit. It is horrible.
Dude, Matt Cawley is going to have your nuts in a sling.
Yeah, I don't care what he likes his point-and-click games. I never played those.
Boo.
Yeah. Yeah, no, but there were some games that didn't translate well at all in 16-bit. They were horrible. It's like it was just a rush job. One actually was surprised, because now that I've got my 1200 running a capture the flag, I was going to say, compact flash card with ROMs on it. I'm running on the actual computer itself. I tried Chucky Egg. I think it was Chucky Egg 2.
Oh, that's a great game.
It looks and plays awesome on there. Yeah, I was quite surprised they fixed it up. And Jet Set Willy as well.
Oh, okay.
Jet Set Willy was actually pretty good on it. It's a lot easier. It's nowhere near as hard, but it's actually quite fun. But some games like Kickstart 2, that was just horrible. Exelon is a joke.
It's amazing. It's amazing that they've got all that power, but it was it a rush job, or they didn't take advantage of, you know, the power of the Amiga, or some guys just didn't actually convert.
Yeah, I think it's more of a rush job. I mean, they think it's just a cash in. Oh, it's going to be on the Amiga. People are just going to buy it anyway.
Yeah, because they see the back of the pack, and you know, the graphics look good, but the game actually plays like, shit.
That's exactly right. You know what I mean? Like, people will see the Spectrum version of Exelon and think, oh, God, look at that crap. Let's get the Amiga one. It looks better.
Absolutely.
It plays nowhere near. It's quite disappointing. You know, you think, like you say, you think you got a more powerful system, you know, you got the developers trying to make the games better, but I think they just think of cash-ins. I think, okay, we'll just try to sell the game on its name alone.
Absolutely.
Hmm.
Well,
but yeah, what about your side? Was there any arguments there?
Yeah, like yourself, man, it was Commodore 64 and a few console people. It was a Sega Master System.
So, really?
Yeah. Look, there was definitely no one that I know that had a Nintendo Entertainment System. And those that did, it was probably in the later part of 88, 89. So it was well after, I know, the US and Japan, obviously. But the Master System around 87, 88, there was quite a few people that had those. And yeah, look, I loved playing Sega arcade games, so the fact that I knew that, you know, they were ported on the actual Master System and they were on cards, so you didn't have to load, you know, for 20 minutes and so it was Commodore 64 versus the Sega Master System. And I think Commodore 64, if I'm being biased, definitely won that schoolyard.
I thought you were only referring to computer wise. I didn't think you were going console
if there was any console people at your school and they were asking,
it would be Master System as well.
There we go.
I mean, you know, I used to always vouch for the C64. Nah, it's better. But deep down inside, when Wonder Boy 3 Dragon's Trap came out, I was very jealous. I was very jealous. I remember having a dream going to my friend's house, stealing his cart, and then plug it in the back of my C64 and playing it.
It's amazing that these systems have actually aged quite well, you know.
Yeah, they have.
You know, the Spectrum, you're telling me that, you know, Chase HQ is fantastic on there, right? I mean, we're talking about a game, you know, from 25 years ago, and it still plays well. That's awesome.
Yeah, man. Well, that's what a lot of indie developers are doing now. They're going back to the good old days of gameplay.
Oh, well, that's it. That's it.
Yeah, but I won't go into that because I can go on about that because Steam at the moment is is really cool if you love your retro games. But yeah, this is a vintage computer podcast, not a, you know, current gen computer podcast. So.
Have you have you actually got all your computers set up right now, Daz?
Yes, I do. Yes. Yes, I've got a C64 Amiga 1200 and Spectrum running via SCART on the LCD.
SCART.
Oh, yes. Hey. It's a SCART to HDMI, so, and they look phenomenal on the screen. Actually, the C64 looks the worst.
Oh, okay.
Via, yeah, yeah. It's just that, as far as I know, it didn't have the proper RGB outputs.
Yeah,
so it doesn't translate properly on the screen. It's just a little bit blurry.
Okay.
But, and my, I actually got another TV specifically so I can run my Amstrad on SCART as well. Because for some reason that wouldn't work through my HDMI converter.
Oh wow!
And that looks really clear. It looks clearer than my Sega Saturn.
Fantastic.
Funny enough, that but
is,
yeah.
That is unbelievable.
Yeah, they're all set up. They're all set up. I mean, I've got another C64 packed away, boxed, but that's just there as a spare. And yeah, that's it. And they're all modded.
Nice.
They're all modded. Actually, I lie. The Amstrad isn't. Because I just got it, so that just needs a few repairs. The door tray plastic on top is missing, so I've bought a new one of those. A kind gentleman off Facebook sold me one cheap from the UK, so I'm waiting for that to arrive. And I need the power switch fixed on the Amstrad because it just stays on, so I have to actually pull out the power cord. But it still works.
Can I ask, Daz?
Yes.
On a future post on our Facebook page, why don't you just chuck us some pics of your computers, man?
I could do that.
I'm sure. I know. I'd love to have a look at it. I love looking at stuff like that. It just, yeah, it brings back that nostalgic, good nostalgic feeling. It's like, wow, yes, I love it.
Just please ignore the yellowing of the Amiga 1200. it's so bad. It needs a heavy dose of retro bright on there.
Have you actually got some of that stuff?
No, I have to get it. But now that it's winter here, it's going to be hard to do it. So,
yeah, fair enough.
I'm in no rush. The thing works, man. I just want to play the damn thing. I don't care what it looks like.
You know what? It adds character, man. I've got a 1040 STE, and it looks. I don't even know what you call that color. It looks like it's gone on a tan, and it's got leathery skin. That's what it looks like.
Oh wow, it's growing microbes on there.
it works. Yeah. Fuck work, so that's my care. As I said, it adds character.
Yeah, but my one looks like someone's just been smoking on it, just blowing cigarette smoke.
Did it actually smell that way when you got it?
No. It was funny in a box and everything, funny enough.
Okay, that's funny.
It was missing one Amiga key, which I actually shift key, and I bought that from the UK as well. It was like $3 posted, £3 posted to me.
It's fantastic, the era that we live in, that we can actually do that.
Yeah,
that is cool.
It's crazy. And yeah, and that one key is the cleanest key on there.
So it stands out.
It stands out. Shift. So yeah, I'll never lose track of where that key is, that's for sure. Okay, well, we'll call it a night, Mr. Oz Retro Gamer. What do you say?
Man, do we have to? No, we have to.
We have to.
You're right.
We've all got work the next day too.
Unfortunately, and it gives us something to talk about at the next podcast. So Daz, busy with Retro Domination, mate. Anything coming up with RD?
The podcast I'm editing at the moment, it should be out before this one.
Oh.
So I really actually have to finish that editing that one. So I'm a busy boy. So then once that's done, I will edit this one straight away and it'll be out there. Out, you know, hot for the presses.
Can't wait, man. Can't wait.
Yeah, so no, besides that, no, just normal RD shenanigans, posting on the wall, having a laugh with the boys and so on.
That's what it's all about.
It's about fun, man. That's all it's about. It's computer games. You don't take yourselves too seriously.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What's going on the Oz Retro Gamer side of things?
Oh, I have to finish off a few articles. We were at Supernova on the weekend, had an awesome time. Thank you very much to Mr. Norbert Snicer, who arranged access to Supernova to cover the Pinball Championship there.
Nice.
Awesome time. So, yeah. So right after this podcast, I have to get cracking on that, and I've got Ms. Oz Retro Gamer helping me with that, which is good. And yeah, man, just regular shenanigans on social media, having fun, chatting to people and engaging, and yeah, all fun, as you said.
Oz Retro Gamer is the king of Twitter, everyone, so jump on it.
Thanks, dude. And and I will actually reciprocate and say that you are the king of Facebook. So
I know I'm not. I'm not trying.
Nah, dude, you know what you're doing. I've got no idea. And you know, resharing a reshare on a reshare. Come on.
You know, it was quite funny actually. Yeah, Alex said a little boo boo today, and it was quite funny actually, and I had to remove it.
Yeah, but, yeah. Look, as soon as I did, I thought, what a muppet. But anyway, but that's all part of the fun.
That's exactly right. That's right. Yeah, trust me, when I saw it, I wasn't angry. I just had the biggest smile on my face. And again, Alex.
I know. As soon as I saw it, I just went, what have you done? Oh, man. I was so dark on myself.
Yeah. Oh, we all make mistakes. And it wasn't a big deal anyway. It was quite funny. So anyway, where can we find you?
Find me on OzRetroGamer.com. Twitter, same handle, OzRetroGamer, and Facebook as well. There's Instagram, Tumblr, wherever else. But yeah, man. And obviously on the Press Play on Tape podcast Facebook page as well. So yeah, looking forward to doing this podcast with your good self, Daz. And yeah, man. And of course, where can we find you, Daz?
On the Press Play on Tape podcast as well. And also Facebook, it's Retro Domination, retrodomination.com. We have all our podcast posts there, articles, etc. Retrodomination.com, it's Podbean. Just search Podbean. We're there as well. Our podcasts are located there. iTunes, if you check out our podcast on iTunes, please give us a review. You know, it helps us get up there and get well known. And that's regarding the Retro Domination podcast. And also, hopefully, this podcast will be on iTunes as well. You will obviously find this on Podbean because that's where you've downloaded it from. But yes, we will be looking at getting this onto iTunes as well. Retro Domination is also on Twitter. I've also got my personal ones, Retro Dom. Jeez, I don't even know what my Twitter is.
Daz Retro Dom.
Daz Retro Dom. That's how much I use Twitter.
Come on, dude. Get with
I don't even know it. I don't even know it. So, yeah, you can check me on Twitter there when I'm on it. I'm rarely on it. But, yeah, but if you send a message to me via that way or mention me, I always get the notification. So I'm always more than happy to reply if anyone has any questions. So, yeah, let's wrap this up.
Two thumbs up, Daz.
Yeah. Okay, we'll close this show off with a nice Sid Chip tune. What do you think?
Mate, you can surprise me.
I will surprise you. Well, guys, thank you for joining us in our first episode. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
We really, really do. Yeah, thanks, guys. Thanks for joining us on our first episode. It's been a lot of fun. So, look, we're looking at doing this monthly. So, once a month, I mean, if we have the time, we might do two, but that's just time pending, you know what I mean? And that's what it just comes down to. We've got busy lives, and you know, we've got our own things we're doing with our OzRetroGamer.com and RetroDomination.com. This is something we wanted to do for us, and if we do an extra one, we do an extra one. If we don't, it'll be one per month, 100%.
Sounds pretty good to me, man.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of fun, Daz. Thank you very much, man. As per usual, we could probably go on for another 2 hours, but we have to stop. All good things must come to an end.
That's right.
So, till the next Press Play on Tape podcast, arrivederci.
Take it easy. See yous.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.